If you're in charge and you're running a meeting, whether it's online, in person, and you're on time, you're 10 minutes late. And that you learn in the military. I mean, it's not just the on time, it's being ready.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm joined by Rich Cote, Executive Vice President at Hudson Meridian. Rich, thanks for taking the time to be here with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Before we get to the core conversation, I always like to start with some good news and gratitude. Is there any personal or professional gratitude you want to share with us today?
Sure. I, first of all, want to thank my wife. We just celebrated 29 years. I spent the weekend up in Boston. It was fantastic. Shout out to our newest public sector client. We just started a new contract with the Hudson River Park Trust. And thanks to them for giving us their first ever CM build contract. So we're very happy to get that and start opening a new book, a new chapter with them as our public sector client.
Well, that's amazing. That's definitely something to be grateful for. And, you know, I was on show days, my gratitudes are always to the client. So thank you for making the time. I know you're super busy. And I say this to almost every guest, but I know it's true. And I'm always just amazed by the caliber of people that will say yes and come in and talk to me. So thank you for doing this.
Anything for you, Eric.
I know, we're your friends. I you know, we love spending time together, but this will be fun. And I always have gratitude for my family. I think what they do to help me be who I am is amazing, right? You're probably not you without your wife. I know I'm not me without my family. So it's pretty amazing what they do in the background for us.
My wife will say that, I'm second to the cats, but I'll take it. I'll take second.
And congrats on 29 years. That's awesome. All right, cool. Well, let's jump into it. So Joe, I always like to start by giving you an opportunity to tell us about yourself. Where'd you grow up? School? Background? What do you do at Hudson Meridian?
Sure. I grew up upstate New York, a little town called Tilson near Kingston in Ulster County. Was born there in 1964, so I will be 60 next week. So went to high school there, private Catholic school, then joined the military, went to Valley Forge Military Academy, got my commission as a second lieutenant from there, and then went on, finished college at Manhattan College, got my bachelor's there, and then went on to a 28-year career in the military, retired as a lieutenant colonel. And my brother had started Hudson Meridian back in 2002, Bill Cote, and I got out of the military and went to work for him. Started as a project manager, worked my way up, went to work for New York City Economic Development Corporation for 6 years. We call it the sabbatical now. And then came back to Hudson Meridian and been back here ever since. I'm the executive vice president. I run the public sector division, which is about 30-40% of the company's gross revenue goes through the public sector division. We do a lot of private sector work as well. And again, very lucky to have this and very lucky to have these great public sector projects that we're working on today.
I love that you get to work with your brother. I know you know my brother just because he's in the industry as well. So I think that's really cool. But what I want to focus on here with the first question or topic I want to discuss is you spent a lot of time in the military. And I'm always curious, like, well, what were some of the values you learned during that time that you think really helped you excel, right, in your career, even after the military? Because clearly you're a very accomplished individual. And I'd love to hear about some of those things.
So integrity is the first thing up front. When I was in officer training in ROTC, and that we had a saying at Valley Forge that a cadet will not lie, cheat, or steal, or tolerate those who do. And that has been a mantra that I have kept my entire career, that they say similar things at West Point and other institutes like that. And having that integrity, and it's important to our clients, it's important to our subcontractors and everybody we deal with in this industry, because so much money and economic power flows through our industry, that having people dealing and working with people with that kind of integrity is important. The second part of that is a very simple one. If you're in charge and you're running a meeting, whether it's online, in person, and you're on time, you're 10 minutes late. And that you learn in the military. You know, in the military, it can be taken to the extreme where you have people standing out in formation an hour before the meeting is supposed to happen. But it is something that has carried on to my civilian career. And it's so important that you be on time. And it's not just the on time, it's being ready, right? You're delivering, especially in the CM realm, you're delivering to clients. They expect you to be the one that's prepared for the meeting, that has the agenda, the sign-in sheets, the presentation, the tech is ready. So if you show up at 10 o'clock for a 10 o'clock meeting, it's going to take you 10 minutes to get ready. So I have lived by that. Anybody that's worked for me understands that you don't be late to my meetings. And I try to instill that in the team that I work with. And I'm fortunate to have a great team that I don't have to look over my shoulder for things like that.
It's funny you mentioned that. I'm in a CEO networking group. And we actually instituted that as a policy, was like, if you're not 15 minutes early, then you're late. And we actually had a fine to pay. And because they were showing up right on time, or, you know, you were kind of like just getting there and then you're still not prepared. You're not sitting yet. You don't have your notes out or whatever we're about to discuss or topic. So, and then honesty and integrity, I think absolutely right. Especially with what we do right in the public realm, public infrastructure, public works. I mean, we just have to hold ourselves to a higher standard than probably pretty much anyone. And we should want to do that. I enjoy that we do that. I appreciate that's how we operate.
The other thing that, if I can add a third, is,
of course,
that,
yeah,
is no private office mentality. I mean, I've lived by that in the military. In the military, you work in an operations center as an officer or on a staff. You don't have a private office. You're solving problems together. And it's so important. I don't have a private office now. When I worked at EDC, I was in the Bloomberg administration, and they have that same bullpen mentality. And I think that's important. It's not just important for sharing information, but for the emerging professionals that are coming in to hear and see what I'm doing and what my other senior staff are doing, and to not be behind closed doors and hear that. That's a military trait, that the ops center mentality, they call it the bullpen, whatever you want. That's a great trait that I tried to carry on here. I sit in a bullpen with all my staff. A lot of people are in the field at the construction sites, but trying not keep secrets and be very open and transparent with my team.
Yeah, you know, we do open door policy. A lot of our team is virtual or on site, like you were alluding to, but I like them all to know they can email me, they can call me, they can ask a question. I love to talk through problems or concerns with everybody. So I think that's really cool. You guys have a big bullpen setup. Let's talk about some of the, you mentioned how much public work comes through, right? Through Hudson Meridian, but you were on the owner's side for a bit, right? You called it the sabbatical earlier. Tell us about, like, how rewarding is it to be part of that, part of delivering the projects, but on the owner's side? How is it different from being on the private side?
Well, you're in the know, right? So when the projects are being thought of, whether it be the New York City ferry system or the next major transportation project, you're on the inside. So especially when you're at that higher level, I was an executive vice president at the Economic Development Corporation. So you get called to the mayor's office, you get called to the high level meetings to say, what if, how could we, what if we, and then you're at the very beginning, before the industry even knows these major projects are coming out there, you're on the inside, and that's super rewarding. Like I use the ferry system as an example. When the mayor said, I want to expand this, we tried this East River ferry thing, we wanted it. You're on the inside, you're creating it, you're getting the money, you're doing the estimates, you're putting the project together. That's super rewarding. And then to take it to fruition and see it built, Skanska built the first 13 of them, and watching them do it and making it happen and watching all the subcontractors execute the work, super rewarding, right? From the first thought where somebody said, hey, we really could, how could we do this? How could we finance it? How could we pay for it? How could we build it? And you're in the room where it happens, to steal from Hamilton. So
that is very cool. So one of the questions I always ask, is there a particular project or accomplishment? And I'm going to ask you to pick from when you were on the owner's side that you completed and you were just so like excited because it was such a positive impact to the community, right? A lot of what we build is, right? Public works or for the public benefit. Was there one project? It sounds like the ferry was fairly impactful.
Ferry was a big one and it was very impactful, but I will tell you the most impactful, and it wasn't necessarily, it was more of a, it was a disaster. It was Hurricane Sandy. And when I was asked by the president of EDC to take it over, run it, go with it and fix everything. And it, there were a lot of sleepless nights after that storm for months to go, where we were running, bringing generators in and working with every contractor we could get our hands on and emergency declarations. Listen, it was hard work and it was maybe not the best benefit for the city, but the outcome was, hey, we were able to, one, we were able to recover, to get all these businesses along the waterfront back working. Then the second thing was we were able to get the funds from the federal government, get reimbursed for it, all our insurance claims, everything else. It was hundreds of millions of dollars. I remember the president of EDC saying, Rich, you have $15 million. That's all you can spend. And what he meant by that is he meant that's how much cash you could have out at any given time. I had to refill the coffers from insurance or from FEMA or from other sources. And we made it work. I mean, he gave me, his name was Seth Pinsky, he's one, a great leader, and he gave me the authority to do that. And he gave me the tools I needed to make it happen. And it was extremely rewarding. And for a disaster, for me personally, it was rewarding. Maybe the disaster wasn't that great for the city, but the hard work that the team that I was with to execute, and the team was the EDC team and all these contractors. It was Skanska, it was Hunter Roberts, Lero, AECOM, Tishman, these guys working late hours, and all their subcontractors, and there's hundreds of them that we made this happen. Very rewarding.
Yeah, and obviously it was sad and it's a disaster, but I think it serves as a testament to what our industry does and is capable of, right? I mean, I remember it, but mobilized quickly, almost immediately, basically. And we were able to do that. And then, you know, you mentioned so many different general contractors there and subcontractors. It's another thing I love about the industry is, like, for the most part, when something is accomplished, it's a team effort. We do it together. We do it as an industry.
I remember there was two subcontractors, Girandola out of Hunts Point and Demand Electric out of Sunset Park, that they had on-call contracts with EDC. And they called me. I didn't have to call them. They say, hey, we're ready. We're loading up our trucks. Where do you want us? Right. So amazing that how it comes together like that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, there have been multiple major incidents, over the last 2 or 3 decades. But on every single one of them, it's been our industry that's responded pretty much immediately and done what we could. So I appreciate you sharing that. That was an interesting perspective, because normally the projects we end up talking about are projects that maybe are more infrastructure related and they're the built environment. But we don't normally touch on how we help during disasters. And I think it's important for us to talk about that.
Bill Cody, our CEO, always tells a story about how he worked at Ground Zero on the cleanup and how contractors just showed up with their equipment. They weren't asking to get paid. They just showed up to be part of it.
I know a lot of stories like that, right? People didn't have contracts, but people were asked to help and they came to help. That was what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And that was another time really united the city. I mean, terrible time, but united us as a people.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
All right, let's shift to the private side a little bit. You're on the private side now, and I know you've been previously as well. What's the biggest challenge facing CMs today? How has it changed over the last few years?
Yeah, I think what's happening is that the laws of how our public agencies can deliver projects are changing very rapidly, whether it be design build or CM build or progressive design build or other delivery methods. So if you're not in politics, get out of business is one of the things that I'd like to quote. One of the gentlemen I work with in Associated Builders and Contractors, for Empire State. He says that all the time, and he's right, because if you're not aware of the laws, one, you'll get left behind, right? You're not aware of the changes and how, especially as a CM or a GC or even an A&E firm, if you're not aware of these delivery methods that are coming, then you're not looking for teams and you're not looking at your business development plan strategy and how you're going to continue to get work, because design, build, bid, build, the lowest read 'em and weep bidders is, yeah, it's going away. And you know, there's all, will always be a place for it, especially for projects that are already designed and on the shelf, but they're getting away from it because they're seeing that the schedules are so much better. Not necessarily costs, but the schedule is so much faster on these alternate delivery methods. A great example is Hunter Roberts just finished a first big prison project for DDC, and they did it in less than 2 years. It's unheard of to have a project. You know, this is that big parking garage and community center out in Queens. And I mean, just their ability to make it happen, get it done in that time frame is just amazing, right? And I hope to get some of that work too. So I think that's the biggest change that I would advise my frenemies out there to really stay tuned to the laws. There's this new law that was passed. It hasn't been signed by the governor yet. It's called Senate 9849. It adds more alternate delivery, CM build and progressive design build capacity to DDC and some other agencies, but it's going to get passed here in January and it's going to be in effect and it's going to change how we do it. I'm doing a large CM build now for DDC at the Juvenile Center, Horizon Juvenile Center in the Bronx, but it's under an emergency declaration. That's the only way they could do it, CM build. But this is going to change the way DDC, who delivers billions of dollars of construction for the city, it's going to give them another tool in their toolbox to do that. And your listeners should know and how this law is going to change and change the playing field and how they should be teaming for that. It's going to change how you get insurance. It's going to change how you hire and manage procurement, public procurements, because it won't be through Passport or something. You'll be doing it through your internal systems, whether it be from CM software or something like that. So you got to be ready and you got to be trained on how to do that.
Yeah, and I want to give you some credit here. You know, you approached me a few maybe months ago, almost a year ago now, right? About, because I sit on the board of CMAA and you were like, well, we need to be doing something for this CMARs, you know, alternative delivery. And you were kind enough to then take that seat. So you are now the director of alternative delivery for the CMAA.
Yeah, that's what I get for opening my mouth, right?
Yeah. So. But that event you ran on CM Build, I think was great for the industry. And I can tell you personally, but also anecdotally from what I heard from others, was that was an eye-opener for a lot of us on the CM side. So I appreciate you being an advocate and helping and putting together that event. And I know you mentioned your frenemies on that event too, and that's your way to refer to some of your competitive colleagues, right?
I mean, because I like to win everyone, but I'm not going to win everyone. And there's some good people, as you saw on that panel, there's some good competition out there. And I think the next step there is for us to do the same thing, but bring in the agencies, bring in the city officials who are spearheading these changes and talk to the membership and talk to your listeners about how they're doing it and how that we should be ready for implementation too.
Well, we can definitely do a CMAA panel like that and we could talk about that offline. And I would love to have someone like that as a guest on the show. If you know anyone that's open and willing to come in and talk about that, we should, we'll talk about that as well.
Okay.
So you mentioned there about CM build and maybe it's got to be internal tools and technology, right, on how you manage the work. And so I do want to talk about that a little bit. Like, how do you think technology is changing the CM landscape in general? I mean, what are you seeing today that maybe didn't even exist 5 or 10 years ago?
Well, I think the CM software platforms are more than just daily field reports and meeting minutes and RFIs and submittals now. They do so much more. They'll do your procurements for you. They'll track your budgets. And every year I see new modules within there, whether it be Procore, CMIC, or Autodesk, whoever you're using, they're all, Kahua is now DDC's platform. And these platforms are expanding your capability. It's just like any technology, like what would life have been like before cell phones? I mean, I don't even remember, right? So it was graph paper and vellum, right? So now we're able to do a lot more with less manpower on the project management side. So, I mean, Super's using Smart Grid in the field, access control that do daily field reports on manpower, types of manpower. this is the technology and on my side of the industry that we're seeing every day. I mean, on the construction side, we're seeing some amazing stuff. Scaffolding. There's robotic bricklaying machines out there now. Just the technology is crazy. Some of the concrete technology, the admixtures and things like that, it's changing fast. If you look at the plumbing side of things with the use of ProPress versus 20 years ago, you were sweating with torches, all these pipes together. Now with this, the ProPress and the PEX technology, you're able to do so much more plumbing so much faster, right? The cost of materials has gone up, but the amount of labor needed to install this equipment has gone down. So, and you can do it so much faster. So there's so much technology. I can't even just talk about drones and the use of drones and the use of AI cameras. There's technology out there that'll put a camera on your hoist on the outside of the building and we'll watch it for a week. And then we'll tell you, listen, your hoist needs to go to the fourth floor at 10 o'clock every morning. And they'll have it automatically do that because they know that the carpenter needs it on the fourth floor every day at 10 o'clock. And that way people aren't screaming down the shaft, send up the hoist. You know, it's amazing what the technology available for that.
I'm going to tell a quick story because you asked that. I don't remember time before cell phones and I don't. But my dad tells me that he used to be able to go on vacation and that would mean no one could call you for a little while. And that just doesn't happen anymore.
Exactly.
I get on a plane and I don't have Wi-Fi and I'm like freaking out. I'm like, wait a minute, what if someone emails me? What if someone calls me right now? I need to be able to respond.
Eric, I know how busy you are and it's the same. You have to have leadership and give your people that time though. You have to be able to have some downtime. It's like pilots, you know, a pilot can't fly 24/7. A pilot has to get some downtime. And if you don't have that time, you'll burn out. And that's when mistakes get made, right? That's when holes get drilled in tunnels and things like that. And that you can't overwork everybody, and technology will do that for just like you said, because that phone is attached to my hand 24/7. It's right here all the time. So, yeah, you got to plan the downtime.
But back to the technology, because on the private work side, sometimes you get a lot more flexibility and leeway on what you can use. Have you found it to be challenged with some of the new technology and trying to get it implemented on public works? And how do you go about that? Like, if there is.
Oh, yes. I'll give you a perfect example. So you can have a great access control technology like a MyComply or a Skill Signal or a Betty that it will tell you using AI technology and turnstiles and swipe cards and Bluetooth on your phone that, all right, so Susie shows up to the job site, she taps her phone to the turnstile, it lets her in. It tells you, does Susie have her SST card? Has she had her site safety training? Is she a plumber, a carpenter, an electrician? What's her company, who she works for? That all goes into a database, spits it out so the super can see, all right, I got 13 plumbers. The super used to have to walk around and count the plumbers. Now the system tells, why is that a challenge? Because in some public agencies, I still have to have a manual sign-in sheet at the gate next to this high technology because they have to have a signed sign-in sheet. Why? I don't know. It's going to happen. They're going to realize I don't need a sign time. Just like they don't need to have mail proposals in 8 copies bound in with certain font and everything. Now they can get it in a PDF through their website, and it's going to change, but that's a challenge. I had a project for Department of Sanitation and we had a system and they're like, oh, you still have to have the sign sheet. I don't get it, but we'll get there. We'll get there. And so sometimes they're a little slower on the uptake, but they'll get it. And there's great people there, especially in the higher levels that want to make those changes. But you got to go to the comptroller's office or whoever, and they got to get approved. And the process takes a long time. The sign-in sheets are just one example. Your requisitions, you know, why can't your requisition be, why can't you go in? And we're seeing it change. You're starting to be able to do more and more in Passport for the city. And you can do your subcontractor payment invoices in there and things. So it is changing. It's just taking more time.
No, I definitely think that everyone's vision is aligned, right? A better New York City now. On the opposing side, and you know this better than I do, there's bureaucracy and things have to be done a certain way and have to be done correctly. And it can take time, but it's good to hear that you are implementing. And it sounds like you've got both going, right? All right, we're still going to do paper sign-in, but we're going to use all the technology we can because it's better for us.
And they want us to, so they can show, hey, this technology gives you a more accurate report than a sign-in sheet. Like, look at what DOB has done. I mean, they've come a long way. Now, do they still have some bureaucratic pigeonholes over there? Yeah, they do. But they've come so far on their ability to do things online and file things and get things going. But every once in a while, you'll run into like OTCR where, you know, I still have to submit a sample of something so that it gets approved. But they've come a long way. And
yeah. I mean, Training Connect is wonderful, right? I mean, it's great to be able to just log in and check people's SST and certifications and cards. Very cool. All right. Well, I always like to spend part of the show on construction and projects. And then I like to spend part of the show on the emerging professionals and next generations of the industry. And so what I want to ask you in line with that is just in general, any advice you'd give to emerging professionals? What is something they should be doing if they want to be the next EVP of Hudson Meridian? What's something an emerging professional today should be doing?
So, I mean, as you know, I'm on the CMGC side of things. So for project managers that are not PEs or architects, RAs, you got to get some professional certification. And it's not just getting the letters after your name, but it's what these certifications offer. Whether it's DBIA or CMAA, they have these certifications. And what they do is they train, one, they have an ethics portion, every one of them. Whether you be a PE, an RA, a CCM, you have to get some ethics training. This goes back to a cadet will not lie, cheat, or tolerate those who do. But they also give them just one thing I love about CMAA's CCM program is the scheduling module that they train. Today, it's so easy to say, oh, well, I got a P6 guy and or gal, and she'll just load everything in and it'll spit out the information. Not understanding how that works, not the algorithm and the formulas of how early starts and where you find a delay and where you find gaps in your schedule and where you can get improvements to your schedule and trying to figure that out. Not understanding how that works, it just leaves you in the dark. So CCM program trains you how to understand that. And when you take the test, that's probably the hardest part of the test is actually going through that schedule and doing the calculations without P6 or Microsoft Project to do it for you and figure out how, you know, the predecessors, successors all tie in to deliver you your milestone dates and your decision points in a project. I think that's a big part about the CCM. I think the other thing that it does is it gives people that come up through the trades or go through a different training program, whether it be a construction management degree or a business degree in college and then get into construction, to also be a professional project manager and be recognized, especially on the public side, and be recognized by your clients as somebody that can manage a project. It's not, and nothing against PEs or RAs, because those programs are very in-depth, but this is for people who have not gone down the design path to also become certified. And you and I have spoken about this, Eric, about there's a difference between REI services and being a construction project manager, that they both have a lot of similarities. But once you start holding the contracts and you are dealing with the subcontractors directly and not through the agency, you're not just submitting a report that says, this is what I think the change order should be, but you have to actually negotiate it and sit across the table. Having these professionals who come from a business background or a CM degree background, they have very good skills at that. So getting them a certification so that they can show our clients that they have it. And the design build realm as well, too. The design build and progressive design build and CM build, the methods that you work with these design teams to integrate the design into the project with the contractor is a technique that requires some professional certification, professional training. And the DBIA does that very well. So I advise all our emerging professionals who are not going through a PE or an RA program to either do the CCM or the DBIA, or do them both, or even if you're a PE or an RA, do it too. So
I'm a CCM and a DBIA as well, and I think both certifications are great. I mean, I'm a PE as well. And I will say what you learn in a construction management, the CCM curriculum, it's different. I mean, being a CCM is different than being a professional engineer. I can't speak for being an RA, but I assume it's different than being an RA as well. So I think it's great advice. Get some professional certifications under your belt to get some basic understanding of how things work, right? I know you just used the scheduling as an example. And I think that's a really good one because there's a lot of time people are schedulers because they know how to use P6, but if you haven't actually built something, you can't really be a scheduler. You're more data input, kind of data analyst kind of person. So,
right. You got to understand sequence of construction and stuff like that. But I mean, these certifications, construction management side of it, I mean, where you're out in the field and you're building projects, the design portion is great to have that knowledge, but you need the construction side. I've always said the perfect project managers are the ones that are PEs and CMs because they get it. They get how it all comes together in the field.
They get both. So, all right, great. We're going to close out. So I'm going to do our lightning round here very quickly. And so I'm just going to fire off four questions and you give me the first answer that comes to mind. And the first one's actually pretty apropos because you mentioned a few times quotes, but do you have a favorite quote you live by or subscribe to?
GMG, green means go. That's what I say to my team all the time when they come to me and say, this is what I want to do. This, I just say GMG, they get it. So green means go. And that's just my short way of giving them praise and saying, you did a good, I don't need to look at this anymore. You got it. So.
Keep going. What about a go-to favorite restaurant?
Well, I'm going to say there's so many that have closed. I'm going to say Keen's Chop House, Midtown.
Cool.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll go out to lunch there one day, right? Okay. We'll talk about the next ADR event. We'll go out to lunch.
That's right.
You're working. It's the evening. What's your background activity? Do you throw TV on? You listen to music? Do you need to work in silence? What's your background activity of choice?
No, I'm a big news channel, news cycle guy, so I like to watch the cable news networks at night, but I also have... I love to go out of my garage or my shop and work on projects. I'm restoring a 1967 Army Jeep right now. So,
oh, yeah. Cool. That was actually a hobby I didn't know about. Do you restore the whole thing yourself or do you bring in some other people or how do you do it?
Well, I bought parts, but I took it apart all the way down. Every bolt, every screw, every piece is taken completely apart and now it's about half back together. So
that is so cool. I would love to see that when you're done with it. That would be awesome.
We'll go for a ride.
Yeah, I'd love that. That'd be great. Last of the lightning round. What's your favorite time of year, favorite season or time of year?
We're in it. Fall is the best, yeah. So I go to hunting camp for a week, and I just love the fall.
That's awesome. Well, that's all the time we have for today. So we'll include any links to resources we mentioned in today's show notes. And thanks again for listening, everybody. And keep your eye out for our next episode.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Building Better Futures. The show notes include links to any resources mentioned in today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.